Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's call. All participants are currently in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. Please note today's conference is being recorded, and I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Marielena Encastier. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Miranda. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for this important conversation. My name is Marielena Encastier. I'm the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center and co-chair of the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign, which has been preparing for this day for the last 2 years. This morning, the Trump administration posted for federal inspection a monster of a regulation that would reshape our nation's legal immigration system, virtually shutting the pathway to a permanent, secure future to anyone who isn't white or wealthy. This racially motivated wealth test called public charge has already been spun this morning by Acting Director Cuccinelli, but he conveniently left out key facts about the consequences. This is an all-hands-on-deck moment for the country. Black, API, Muslim, Arab, South Asian, and Latinx communities will all be harmed. Health providers, pediatricians, educators, legal services, businesses and local communities across the nation will all be affected, as an estimated 26 million families will suffer the consequences of this racially motivated law. This new rule presents an end run around Congress that also overlooks the direct feedback from more than a quarter million Americans, the vast majority of whom were opposed to this regulation. Instead, the administration has favored speed-tracking the enactment of this xenophobic agenda. In Trump's elitist world, only a family of four making over $62,000 per year would be deemed fully safe from this pernicious rule and would be deemed worthy of belonging in this country. It's important to recognize that this rule, in concert with the many, many other changes the Trump administration is trying to make to our immigration system, whether by eliminating DACA, ending the temporary protected status programs and deferred and forced departure, whether it's decimating our refugee and asylum system, closing off public housing assistance, or enacting a discriminatory Muslim ban, the Trump administration is enacting a hateful, invisible wall to keep immigrants out, and public charge is at the very foundation of this. Of all the immigration policy changes from this administration, this is the one that would have the deepest, widest and most long-term impact on our country and our democracy. We will not stand for this. Partners with me on the phone today have been key leaders in the effort to fight back against this regulation, and together we make a fraction of the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign, a coalition of more than 380 organizations in over 33 states that have organized against this rule, the public charge rule. The National Immigration Law Center and other legal partners are preparing to sue to fight back against this regulation, just as we have done against DACA, Muslim ban, and other issues. Today is a difficult one for our movement and for our country, but we are by no means defeated. The events of the last week, from the anti-Latino mass shooting in El Paso to the cruel raid in Mississippi, have strengthened our resolve even more. We at the National Immigration Law Center believe in the freedom to remain and the freedom to thrive in this country. We will continue to fight for a country in which we all belong. Joining me today are Olivia Golden, Executive Director of the Center on Law and Social Policy, or CLASP, who we are fortunate to be co-chairing the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign; Jonathan Jays Green, co-founder and National Director of the Undocumented Black Network; Dr. Julie Linton, Chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics Council on Immigrant Child and Family Health, and Cynthia Buisa, Executive Director of the California Immigrant Policy Center. All of these members are partners in the steering committee and part of the campaign. We will hear short remarks from each of them, and then we will open the lines up for your questions. First, we'll start with Olivia. Olivia?
Thank you so much, Marielena. The public charge regulation published today is more evidence that this administration is determined to damage the lives of millions of immigrants, their families, their children, and their communities. And as Marielena said, it's part of a sustained attack on immigrants, on people of color, and on working Americans and their families. Equally shameful and also lawless is the fact that in posting this regulation, the administration has chosen to ignore more than 250,000 comments that were formally submitted during the 60-day comment period on the proposed rule. And those comments that the White House has decided to ignore came from people from all sectors of American society. Faith leaders, mayors, governors, advocates for women and communities of color, members of Congress, teachers, pediatricians and major health advocacy organizations and health providers, small business owners, and many others from all walks of life. As all the comments indicated, in America, wealth should not be the measure of worth. The color of your skin should not count more than the content of your character. We should protect and not attack children and families. Those children are our future, as many commenters pointed out. And we should not damage the public health and the economic stability of communities by threats that go far beyond the people directly targeted. Independent researchers who submitted extensive and detailed comments showed that this regulation threatens nearly 26 million people through a wide variety of far-reaching provisions. It threatens our neighbors, our friends, our classmates, and our families. And it threatens through a deliberate effort to spread fear and to allow discretion for people within the immigration system to make decisions about whether families can contribute. I want to spend just a moment speaking directly to families who are feeling threatened today, which I know are many and that all of you write for them. If your family is threatened by what the president did today, I want to ask families to do something difficult but very important, which is not to panic and to keep meeting family needs. That's for several reasons. The public charge regulation, as it was published today, includes a 60-day window, opens Wednesday, closes October 15th. Until that window changes, nothing has changed for families. The proposal published today says that receipt by someone in the family, such as a child, by a family member of the person, of the immigrant, doesn't count, and many people who have immigration status, for example, such as refugees, are not covered by the rule. So there is time in those 60 days to get advice on what is right for you, the health and nutritional stability of your family. Putting food on the table matters enormously. And the last thing I want to say, as Maria Elena highlighted, is that we are in this fight together and will continue to stand together. At CLASP, we will continue to support the litigators through research and data. We will continue the fight by reaching out directly to immigrant families and to people in communities who inform immigrant families. We will be documenting the harm of this proposal and the harm already done to children, families, and communities. And we will be bringing those facts about the harm. We will continue to bring those facts to the public and to Congress so that Congress can act. The administration won't stop on its own, so we must pull together the coalitions, the campaigns, the evidence, and the strategies that will stop this attack on not only our friends, colleagues, neighbors who are immigrants, but on the whole nation's future. And we can succeed together.
Thank you, Olivia. Thank you so much for your leadership. Next, we will hear from Jonathan J. Screen. Jonathan?
Yes. My name is Jonathan J. Screen, and I'm the co-founder and national director of the UndocuBlock Network. We at UndocuBlock are a network of Black immigrants from across the African diaspora, the Caribbean, Afro-Latinx people, and we are really invested in this fight because we are clear that this attack, that this announcement of public charge is one of the many efforts of this administration to whiten the composition of this country. We believe that this rule is cruel, immoral, and it is racist and classist, and we are going to fight this until the end. Last year, when the initial ruling was announced, we were happy and proud to be a part of a larger coalition of the public Protecting Immigrant Families campaign to make sure that we were getting as many comments to fight back this racist ruling, right? And we are ready to continue fighting even as the final ruling is announced. For us, this ruling is actually pushing family members to choose between the things that they need and the people that they love, and there's nothing more cruel than that. This is already causing a chilling effect even before it takes place. We are already hearing from our members across the country, particularly in Minnesota, of women foregoing access to WIC and other benefits, parents thinking about how they're going to be able to care for their children, and that is immoral. And also, we are very clear that we've seen attacks like this before. We've seen people in government seek to create wealth tests and demonize people of color, Black people, immigrant communities for providing for their families and taking advantage of the very same programs that other white working class folks take advantage of. So we are clear that this ruling is a part of Trump's white supremacist agenda, and we are going to fight it until the end. We are angry, but we remain unshaken in our commitment to justice and freedom for all of our communities. And I want to just end also to give a word to all of the undocumented community members, the immigrant community members, the families of those who are directly impacted as well, who are worried, who are panicking about what this will mean for themselves and their families. I wanted to remind all of them today that we love you, that you belong, and that you are a part of our American dream. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. Thank you for your leadership and partnership. Next, we will hear from Dr. Julie Linton with the American Academy of Pediatrics. Julie?
Thank you so much for having me on the call today. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Julie Linton. I'm a pediatrician and the chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics, or AAP, Council on Immigrant Child and Family Health. As pediatricians, we care for and care about all children, no matter where they or their parents were born. When the public charge proposal was issued late last year, hundreds of pediatricians from across the country submitted comments to the proposal, sharing why it was a dangerous threat to child and family health. Now that the public charge proposal is final, I have serious concerns about what it will mean for immigrant families and the health of our children. Despite the hundreds and thousands of comments that were submitted to the proposal, it is clear that the outcry from pediatricians and child health experts was ignored. The public charge rule presents immigrant families with an impossible choice: keep one's family healthy and risk family separation, or forgo vital services like preventive care and food assistance so that a family can remain together in this country. Of course, this is not a choice at all. I can tell you firsthand that long before this rule became final, pediatricians across the country were witnessing the chilling effect of the proposal as we care for children and families, with families disenrolling from programs or avoiding health services for which they are eligible. The chilling effect of this rule has meant that children who are eligible for Medicaid are not being enrolled. Young children who would benefit from nutrition programs are missing out. Expectant mothers are forgoing prenatal care, all because of fears that doing so could jeopardize their ability to remain together as a family. This carries real consequences for children. It also has serious implications for our country. We need all children in the United States to reach their full potential if we are to reach ours as a nation. Investing in nutrition, healthcare, and other essential needs keeps children learning, parents working, families strong, and allows all of us to contribute fully to our community. Medicaid is just one example. Children covered by Medicaid miss fewer days of school due to illness or injury, perform better in school, and are more likely to graduate and attend college than their uninsured peers. They are also more likely to be healthier adults that earn higher wages and pay more in taxes. Children who are deprived of a program like Medicaid will suffer the consequences, and this will also have a negative impact on our economy. Estimates show that changing the public charge definition puts millions of children at risk of disenrollment from key health programs, including children with specific medical needs. Recent data shows that nearly 1 million fewer children are enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP, and the chilling effect caused by the public charge proposal likely at least in part, is driving unenrollment. And this is likely to get much worse. As a pediatrician, this public charge regulation is an assault on my professional role. I am unsure how to guide families when I know that enrollment in bread and butter services that keep them healthy could jeopardize the family unity. This final rule serves to further intimidate and frighten families who seek needed services to keep them healthy and productive. Taken together with other looming harmful proposals, these actions will have detrimental consequences on immigrant health and well-being. The Academy strongly opposes this final rule and urges DHS to immediately rescind it. Pediatricians will oppose any proposal that puts children's health at risk, and we will continue to speak out to ensure that all children, no matter where they or their parents were born, are healthy and safe. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Linton, and thank you for the Academy's partnership and all you are doing to defend children in this country, including children of immigrant parents and immigrant children themselves. Our final speaker today is Cynthia Buisa with the California Immigrant Policy Center. Cynthia?
Thank you, Maria Elena. Thank you, everyone, for joining us and to our amazing partners on the call. As Maria Elena mentioned, the organizations you hear on the phone is a fraction of a powerful coalition prepared to oppose this role. We stand ready as a state and as a partner to respond, to make sure that we take a courageous and effective stance to support and protect immigrant families who call our state and our country home. We will make sure that a coordinated statewide response helps to relay the accurate information to our communities, communities that are already reeling from social inequities in our society. We will not allow these harmful regulations to undo the great work that we have done as a country and in California on behalf of immigrants and working families. And we will work with all that we've got to ensure that this is not a lasting and permanent condition for our immigrant communities. As my colleagues have already noted, we have ways in which to respond to this, and we'll work with our city, our county, state, and national partners to uphold our shared humanity and shared values. I believe that this is a phase in a struggle for our future that we will ultimately win because history is on our side. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, and thank you for your partnership and your leadership on the campaign as well. As I mentioned earlier, the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign is made up of an array of diverse advocates and community leaders from across the country, healthcare professionals, education leaders, social service and legal service leaders, and so many others who are fighting back against this rule and have made this a major priority for their institutions. We would now like to open up the line for questions from all of you. Operator, can you please provide the instructions?
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star, then one keys on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, that's star one to ask a question today. And we've got our first question from Mike Scheer with the New York Times. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for doing this call. Marilena, maybe you can answer this or anybody else that wants to jump in. I just want to understand that the way this works, as you guys understand it, is the way I'm thinking of it, which is that for most of the people who are in the United States on temporary visas, not permanent, not yet having a green card, they're not eligible for these services anyway, correct? So if you're here in the United States, you're on a temporary program, you're going to apply for it, you go to apply for your green card, and that's when the immigration folks will not look backwards at your record because you haven't been able to apply for these, you haven't been a beneficiary anyway, but rather will look forward and say, based on some characterization that we have of you, are you likely to use the benefits in the future? And that's the chilling effect, right, that you're talking about? Is that how you understand it to work?
So a couple of things, Mike. Thanks for joining the call today. This is Maria Elena, sorry. So I think one of the things that's so confusing about this rule and the reason that it's so complex and has already caused the chilling effect, even when it was just in a proposal, is that there's a lot of confusion about who is impacted by this. And in fact, so much of the rhetoric of this administration has been about undocumented immigrants and immigrants who are coming here to use public benefits, et cetera, when in fact this is about lawfully present immigrants who are already entitled to certain programs and the rules are being changed on them and basically subjecting them to family separation if once they apply for a green card. It is not retroactive, though, as you mentioned.
But is it true that somebody who is prior to having a green card, the vast majority of people who are lawfully in the United States but not yet with a green card, that those people are generally not eligible for these benefits in the first place? In other words, they're not on these programs. They only go on these programs after they get a green card.
Is that correct? This is Olivia. Shall I plunge in, Marielena, or do you want to add?
No, go for it. I'll add.
Okay, so I would say a couple of things, Mike. The first is that, as Marielena said, the incredible complexity of the rules is part of why the chilling effect happens and why people are already have been withdrawing citizen children, for example, because people seeking green cards are in families with people of many statuses. So they themselves might be eligible in some states, depending on which program. I mean, some of the programs operate by households, some by individuals, so they might be eligible, and they may well have fears about the eligibility of someone in their household. In the comments submitted on the proposed rule, if you look at the comments by researchers, you will see that the chilling effect evidence comes from many things. There are some simulations. But one of the sources is a look after welfare reform was passed with complex rules about eligibility, which found vast declines among people who were not affected as well as those who were, which resulted in the previous guidance, which the administration wants to upend after it's worked fine for decades.
Mm-hmm.
That previous guidance said, we have to have a clear line here, because if you ask immigrants themselves who are fearful, who do not necessarily expect good faith from the way this administration does it, who would give up anything right now to be able to support their family's future, if you ask them to keep track of who's eligible for what in Medicaid in their state and which of those things could in the future count against them, then you get people making decisions to forego care. And so the argument of a chilling effect is not just based on speculation. It's not even just based on what's been happening and fully documented in these past couple years. It's also based on the research that led to the prior policy that the administration is changing. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps. I guess I just am trying to make sure I understand. And I guess the answer is that there are some people who might be receiving benefits because there are such
a broad swath of
but that there are also people for whom, you know, they may not be using the benefits yet, but they have an economic situation that is going to convince the adjudicator that they are likely to use them in the future and that could count against them as well.
And I think another damaging element of the rule is that it vastly, as Marielena said in her remarks, it explicitly makes the economic situation that they're in count against them in a way that we think the statute doesn't support. We think it's an end run around Congress, but for example, with measures of income as well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Mike, I think the last thing I'll just add is also that, remember, this is a complex rule that also includes a number of other negative factors, so even your credit history would impact your ability. And this is why this is such a pernicious rule that we believe is racially motivated and really ends up resulting in a racial wealth test as to whom can be in this country and who is worthy of remaining in this country. But thank you for your question, Mike. Operator, next question.
Thank you. We'll go next to Paige Cunningham with The Washington Post. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for holding this call. I was just so you've sort of talked about the practical effects of this, but I'm wondering if you could outline some of the legal arguments that you have to bring, especially over, you know, obviously the public charge consideration has been in place for a really long time, but how are you going to argue that this particular expansion of criteria is, I guess, unconstitutional or unlawful or however you're characterizing it? Thanks.
Thank you for the question, Paige. As I may have mentioned at the top, we are at the National Immigration Law Center, along with co-counsel. We'll be suing shortly, and we will provide the specific legal claims. But it's as many as you can imagine around, along the lines of the Administrative Procedures Act, which has been the core claim of almost every lawsuit that we and others have filed against this administration, and because we believe that this is a racially motivated rule and vastly expanded rule from the way it has been applied for the last decades. We also believe that there is an equal protection claim, but more information coming on our litigation shortly. Thank you. Next question, operator.
Thank you. And we'll go next to Pamela Fessler with NPR News. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is actually for Dr. Linton. You were mentioning about the impact on children on Medicaid or getting medical care. Now, the administration says that's actually the one thing that they did change in response to all of the comments, that it would not apply to the use of Medicaid for children. So do you not agree with that, that they made that change? I'm not quite clear why it would have such a devastating impact going forward on children.
I'm grateful to see that that change was made. However, I am very concerned based on the fact that in its initial form, this was a 450-page regulation that was confusing for me as a physician to understand. This is an incredibly complicated rule that is very intimidating for all of us, and particularly for families who are already at baseline concerned about their unity. And we have a lot of great data looking at that there has already been disenrollment from Medicaid, likely at least in part due to this proposed regulation that was published and now in its final form, that we've had a great deal of disenrollment from Medicaid. And I've had cases right in my clinic of children disenrolling from WIC, which was not even part of the final proposed regulation back from October of 2018, that we're concerned that this would impact them, even though WIC is not part of either the latest or the final regulation. So I think it's incredibly misguided of the administration to expect that adding that is sufficient to appease the concerns of pediatricians, because we're very concerned that this chilling effect will have a deep and really devastating impact on our ability to care for all children.
So you don't believe that educating people about the fact that it would not apply to the use of those benefits, that you just think that people will actually not believe that or understand that?
I think that many of us will work very hard to educate families in every way possible, just as we always do. But I think it's very difficult to trust an administration that has already systematically separated children from parents on our border, that has already just had a mass raid last week in Mississippi, leaving U.S. citizen children alone. So I don't know how to answer that other than to say that I'm deeply concerned as a pediatrician that this is going to be very confusing for families who are already deeply frightened.
And just if I may add, this is Olivia, Pam. It's not just speculation, right? It is already having that effect, and the research submitted in comments showed how that played out with previous restrictions on adults that then played out for their citizen children. So it is something that the evidence suggests. And of course, when adults don't get health care, it's much less likely, or get health coverage, it's much less likely that their children do as well. So there are lots of different pieces to the regulation that we're still seeing how they all fit together, but those are among the reasons to think they have to do much more than that.
Okay. Thank you.
And Pam, this is Maria Elena. Just I think the point that you mentioned about the education is really critical. The Protecting Immigrant Families campaign will be launching a monumental education and outreach campaign to help families understand what is in the rule, what's not in the rule. But as everyone has talked about already, the impact already has been achieved to some extent of the harm. The humanitarian impact will only be greater now that this rule is final, which is exactly why we're suing to try to block it from being implemented.
Thank you.
Operator, next question.
Thank you. And as a reminder to our audience, that's star one to ask a question today. We'll go next to Harris Meyer with Modern Healthcare. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. There's a provision where there'll be enhanced scrutiny or negative scrutiny for people who have medical conditions. That will be a negative factor weighed by the immigration officers. Dr. Linton or anyone else, does that suggest, or are you, would that cause fear that people would not report medical conditions or come in for care for fear that that would then be used against them in weighing their lawful residency application?
Thank you for that question, Harris. Let's start with Dr. Linton and then Jonathan and Sam, if you guys want to share a little bit from your perspective of how this is already playing out on the health side.
Yeah, I'm happy to start with that, and then I'll pass to my colleagues because I think there's a number of ways of looking at that question. I think I take care of a number of children with special health care needs as well as children whose parents have special health care needs, and anything that jeopardizes access by creating an association between the ability of a family to stay together and accessing services that keep them healthy is a deeply devastating thing for me as a pediatrician. If I have a parent who has a medical condition who isn't getting the health care that they need, then they can't take as good care of a child. And every parent wants the best for their children. So it's absolutely impossible for me to envision that anything that limits access to medical care would ever be good for a child.
Yeah, hi. This is Cynthia from the California Immigrant Policy Center. The only thing I would add is, you know, the conversations we've had with folks from the WIC Association and folks that are running community clinics is similar to what you've already heard. One is that there has been drop off in enrollment. There has been fear of sharing even residency information in some cases. But the other conditions that we've heard about is that parents actually hiring immigration lawyers to advise them on what to do, and subsequently sometimes public benefits lawyers, and sometimes subsequently disenrolling from programs. So as already noted, I think because of the magnitude of the implications and so much still to plow through, people are just erring on the side of too much caution. And really, they're at least from this, what we've heard in California, there's any number of that. You know, people just scared to share information, even with assurances in as basic places as community clinics that there are protections.
Yeah, this is Jonathan. Just to continue to emphasize how cruel this is, right? Like, as I think about some of our members that have shared that they're already really worried about what's going to happen with this ruling. Even thinking about my family member, I have a sibling who is undocumented, and she has three beautiful, thriving children who were born in the U.S. And thinking about her worried about whether or not she can take him to the doctor, you know, to be treated for a cold, right, in fear of what's going to happen to her status, it's absolutely immoral. Right. So I think we need to be really clear that this is already having impact in our community. And regardless of the details of what the actual policy looks like in terms of how the fear is spreading in our communities, and it's already having a detrimental effect. So we need to call it out for what it is and fight back against it.
Thank you, Jonathan. And Harris, this is Maria Elena again. I mean, I would share another example of the chilling effect from North Carolina. A local advocate at a legal advocacy organization whose name is Luz has been assisting local residents with enrollment in the Affordable Care Act marketplace coverage, Medicaid, and other affordable health care programs. And she gave us an example of one immigrant child who already has permanent residency, right? So this is someone who would not be impacted by the rule, but after renewing her marketplace coverage for 2019 and the client found out about the proposed public charge rule, she called to terminate not only her own marketplace coverage, but also Medicaid coverage for her U.S. citizen children. And despite the advocate's education and explaining to her that that, you know, the impact that this would have on her family if the children or family got sick or had a medical emergency, but the fear was so great about the impact that this rule would have. And this, again, was prior to today, obviously. And we expect that this will be similar across the country, which is why the estimate of 26 million people or more that would be impacted by this will create a humanitarian crisis in the nation, and most importantly, it creates a fundamental shift to who we are as a nation, and creates this this racially motivated test, racial test. Thank you. Operator, any other questions in the queue?
As a reminder to our audience, it's star one to ask a question today. We'll pause just a moment to allow any further questions to queue. It appears we have a follow-up from Harris Meyer. Please go ahead.
Does this, I'm a little confused about, does this affect DACA recipients?
Yes, Harris. There are some programs that DACA recipients would be eligible for that they would be impacted by this, depending on their particular circumstances. And other lawfully present immigrants as well, so individuals with work authorization who are not yet permanent residents. Great. Operator, any other questions?
We have no further questions in the queue at this time. I'll return the floor back to Mary Elena and Katier.
Great. Thank you so much, Operator, and thank you all for joining us today. Special thank you to each of our speakers, to Olivia Golden, to Dr. Julie Linton, to Jonathan J. Green, and Cynthia Buisa. We will provide more information to you. If you have any questions for any of the speakers, please don't hesitate to email us at media@nilc.org, and someone will get back to you shortly and connect you to the speakers or answer any questions you have about this very, very complex rule. I'll just close by saying that hearing Acting Director Cuccinelli's speech this morning and his sharing his immigrant story was deeply, deeply offensive. And I see this rule as a personal attack. It's a personal attack on me as a Latina, as an immigrant. I know very well, deeply, deeply well, that if my family were trying to immigrate today from Colombia, this rule would keep us out. And I also know that my family and all my siblings who are now biochemists, educators, health providers, business leaders are as worthy as Cuccinelli's and Stephen Miller's and Trump's family. So we are all committed through the Protecting Immigrant Families campaign to block and stop this rule and from having the hateful and racist impact that it is meant to have. Thank you all for joining us, and please stay in touch. Thanks again to each of our speakers.